Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design, build, and maintain gardens around the New York City and the surrounding area. And our show aims to bring the culture to horticulture. And today we have a pretty sexy show for Valentine's Day.
Hot and steamy.
Hot and steamy. Plant sex and garden lust. It's all about that. So writer and publisher Sandra Knopf, who's been a guest on our show, I think a couple of times before, is going to join us. But I want to talk a little bit about Valentine's Day.
Yes.
I don't know if this happens to you where you live, but here in New York City, the epicenter of conspicuous consumption, as some people like to think about it, as soon as the Christmas decor is wiped from the shelves, the Valentine's Day merchandise takes its place, right, Alice?
Like, it's bad lingerie.
Bad. Oh my God. It just falls apart. The candy hearts, the cards, the gifts in the shades of pink and red. And so this saccharine stuff kind of carries us through the holiday doldrums of January, right? And then right around the beginning of February, the big guns come out, as Alice said. The lingerie, the flower ads, the jewelry ads, and they start rotating through our consciousness, right?
I have to say, if I see one more Jared Galleria of
I know.
Jewels.
Bad jewelry, ugly, you know.
I'm going to vomit.
I know. So you know, personally, I generally ignore this sophomoric stuff because at this point, I'm more interested in the plant catalogs that are kind of piling up on my desk.
Sure.
And like so many of us in the Northern Hemisphere, like so many gardeners, I'm not lusting for that. I'm lusting for new plants and I'm
spring
and spring and I'm really missing my garden.
Right.
And what's more sensual than a garden? What I can't think of anything more sensual. And anybody with even a rudimentary knowledge of botany knows the basics of plant sex and reproduction. I think you kind of learn that in like fifth grade.
Right.
But that wasn't always the case. In fact, it took a chance lecture by our horticultural hero today to sort of fully open our eyes to the realities of plant reproduction.
So our horticultural honoree of the week.
All right. So Sebastian Vaillant. On June 10th, 1717, at 6 o'clock in the morning, which I think is very early for a lecture on sex.
Even a Frenchman.
At the Jardin du Roi in Paris. He was the substitute lecturer because the teacher had to go and speak somewhere else. He delivered what was called, quote unquote, the talk to the assembled medical students.
This is like health class, ninth grade.
Yeah. And the title of his lecture was called Discours sur la sexualité des plantes. And the amphitheater was packed. Vaillant declared that flowers were the most important parts of plants. Up until this point, few people understood how plants reproduced. Some even speculated that pollen was actually excrement and considered some of the exposed parts of the flower vile organs. The idea that plants had genitalia was like unsettling
right.
to a lot of people.
Well, this is, you know, ankles and and
elbows were not exposed. Right. Although, you know, the breasts were pushed up and like exposed.
Spilling over.
You know, but,
right.
you know, we can't talk about plant sex. Okay. So Ruth Kazinger, in her excellent book called A Garden of Marvels, which I think everybody should buy, details Vaillant's lecture this way. Alice, do you want to read that? Because he put it very, very, very well.
Very well. Okay. Stamens, which the celebrated Tournefort regarded as the lower and most vile organs of plants, are actually the most noble. Then he got down and dirty. Stamens are responsible, as in male animals, for the reproduction of the species. Their anthers are equivalent to testicles. In dioecious plants, he said, where the male flowers are at a distance from the females, the tension or swelling of the male organs occurs so suddenly that the lobes of the bud are forced open with surprising rapidity. These male organs, seeking only to satisfy their violent transports, upon finding themselves freed, produce an abrupt general discharge, a swirl of dust, spreading fecundity everywhere.
Gorgeous.
Then they find themselves exhausted. When a flower contains both male stamens and female pistils, the stamens need not act with such haste or vigor, and it may be presumed the slower the actions are, the longer will be the duration of their innocent pleasures. All this, he said, could easily be observed in parietaria. For example, in the mornings, but if one should happen to miss the action, there was an alternative, provided the plants, so to speak, have reached competent age. They could be spurred into action with the tip of a pin. In either case, the dust flies towards the female organs, where its volatile spirit travels down the solid style to fertilize the egg in the female's belly. And so he continued in this scandalous fashion.
Now, it's obvious we want to be a dioecious plant because it's longer and slower. All right. Anyway, this lecture became famous and was read by many, including Carl Linnaeus, whom we all know used the binomial system to classify all living things and who used a sexual system to classify plants based on the details of a flower's sexual anatomy. So if Vaillant didn't go out there and say, hey, these are sex parts, this is how plants reproduce, you know, He sort of set the cornerstone.
We'd still be covering our elbows
yes.
and our ankles.
Yes. So, and I'm not surprised that it was a Frenchman that opened our eyes
right.
to plant sex. So today's guest, like our horticultural hero, is a little bit of a groundbreaker.
She's a lady.
That's right. Sandra Knopf. Her writing credits include Colorado Voices columnist for the Denver Post, essayist in Mary Jane's Farm and Green Prints, and columnist at usrepresented.com. She's also been a guest commentator on KRCC's, which is NPR's Southern Colorado affiliate station, Western Skies Radio Show, sharing stories about her urban backyard farm experiences. Her latest venture, Green Woman Publishing, has published 6 issues of Green Woman, a literary journal, and the young adult sci-fi fantasy novel Zira and the Green Man, about a teenage girl who tries to save the world from genetically engineered monstrosities. The reason she's here today is because her recent book, which is a collection of erotic gardening-themed short stories by various authors. It's called 50 Shades of Green, and it's edited by Sherry Colburn. Sandra, welcome back to the show.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
I really like the hot excerpt you just read. That was very exciting.
It was very exciting.
I thought so, too. I mean,
I need a moment. I need a moment by myself.
So, Sandra, we found out about your latest book because you sent out a call for submissions. I think it was early in 2014. Is that right?
Yes.
And I was intrigued enough to actually consider sending a story, which is still kind of in the works. But what inspired you to publish this book? Tell us a little bit about that process.
Well, I had been wanting to do a book with some other writers for a while. That was kind of on my mind. I wanted to do kind of have several writers and put a novel together. And then with the whole 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, I was very curious. I read the book, and I was shocked, not about the BDSM sex, but by the inequality of the relationship.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, this would be really fun to kind of turn on its head and write a story about a woman with a young man. And because I'm into the plant world and all of that, I wanted to make her a botanist or somebody that was in the green industry and very successful, a billionaire. So I talked to some friends about that, and we came up with these hilarious scenarios. And then I thought, no, I don't want to be stuck with it, just doing something that's already been done. How about a compilation of stories about sex in the garden? And I've always thought that sex and the garden went together. I knew about the plant, the sex organs are flowers, and that's what we celebrate on Thanksgiving. You know, we're basically, giving our loved ones sex organs of plants.
Yeah, right, for Valentine's Day. Right.
And the garden's so erotic. And
it is.
A friend of mine said years ago, she was a master gardener, and she said everyone should have a place for lovemaking in their garden.
Oh.
Well,
oh, my God, I want to use that. Now, Alice and I,
our engineer just looked at us like, hello.
Well, you know, Alice and I have never designed a garden with that actual, but you know, I would love to see a matronly New Yorker, you know, Alice and I
up on a rooftop.
We're like, you know, let's talk about your needs. Would you like a place for lovemaking in the garden?
We can build some big hedges on the roof and nobody will ever be able to see you.
Although I wouldn't be surprised if some of our clients did do that in the garden.
Name a few. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, we have created very lush environments. So we agree with you, Sandra, that it's ripe.
It's primal. Yeah, it's primal. The Garden of Eden. You know, there's all that stuff. So when we got the book in the fall, we put it on our bedside table. I put it on my bedside table, intending to read it a little at a time. After the first story, I was a little bit addicted, and I couldn't wait to read more. Each story and the writer's style is so different. So how did you select the stories to include?
Yeah, that must have been tough.
Well, what we just selected what we thought were the very best stories. And when I first put the call out, I had no idea of what to expect. I had never published any erotica. I didn't really read erotica before this, although I did have to research quite a bit before I got into the whole project. And I honestly didn't know what we'd get. So when we started receiving these very interesting stories and very literary stories, I was thrilled. Not all of them were at a high quality, but many of them were, and we wound up just having quite the assortment of humor and historic fiction and
just
a little bit of everything, and I just liked how it came together. And
did you get any like super raunchy ones, Sandra, that you just couldn't
publish?
Include?
Yes, there was one in particular that was really gross, and it was about a pool boy and the housewife that's all alone and looking out the window, and you just knew where it was going immediately. And no.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at the titles, all right? It starts with Phallus in Pudicus, all right? And ends with Exploding Alfalfa. I mean, like, that alone would cause me to want to read this. Just the titles alone, you know?
So, Sandra, can you read? You were actually a writer of one of the stories. Can you read a passage from that?
Yes, I will read a couple paragraphs, and this is my debut erotic reading.
Okay. Dun, 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 dun.
Okay, this is from Exploding Alfalfa. And for a little bit of background, a woman and a lot of women are at this native plant class. And one woman, who happens to be the youngest of the group, she finds herself very interested in the professor. So here it starts. He had disappeared down the stream bank and found a handful of raspberries. He handed them out, declaring that they were mouth-wateringly delicious. He made sure to give me one, and his fingers touched my palm, sending a thrill through my lower belly. I press the red berry between the roof of my mouth and tongue to release its juices, and it was true. The flavor was glorious. I imagine the professor and I cozying up, sharing berries, and then more than berries. I couldn't believe my physical reaction to this man. He wasn't what you'd call sexy. He was probably a little over 40, tall with broad shoulders and a nice round ass, a little overweight, messy dark hair, scruffy short beard. He was wearing khakis and cheap tennis shoes. But as I watched him now, holding another flower in his meaty hand, gently pulling it apart, showing us the petal structure, those internal sex organs, then passing the pieces around among the group of women as if they were precious jewels, I caught my breath. His rough, big hands on the delicate petals brought one thing to mind with absolute clarity. I needed his hands on me.
Ooh. Wow. I need
chicka-chicka-bow-wow.
So, Sandra, tell us what inspired that story for you.
Well, I actually did take a native plant class, and there was a description of exploding alfalfa.
Uh-huh.
And it's when the bee puts,
the member?
Proboscis.
What?
When the bee puts her
proboscis
yeah. into the plant, and it excites the stamens, and it'll actually make the flower explode. And it was such an erotic thing for me to think about at that time, and it was a beautiful day, and the birds were singing, and, you know, it was just one of those luscious days. And I thought, this is so sexy. And it stayed in my mind. And so that's how the story came about.
And those instructors with the khaki pants, right? I mean, that's the perfect description of that guy. I know
yes,
that guy.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. I did notice, too, that, so you used a pen name, obviously, right?
Yes, I did, but
yeah.
That's out of the bag.
A few of the writers did that, right? Like, not all of them are writers of erotica. A few of them did use pen names as well.
They do, and that was one of the things I struggled with, too. At first I thought, why would anybody use a pen name in
right.
this day and age? And
yeah.
then you kind of dig around in it, and you see that some people just want their privacy.
Sure.
Or whatever, and... You know, so you can't judge on that, and
right.
I don't know. It's I still, you know, I still don't really get all of this.
What did you learn about about erotic literature in general, about that? You know,
genre,
as you
yeah.
were, you know, as you were researching, what did you learn about the genre that kind of surprised you and kind of?
Well, I was very. Perplexed about 50 Shades of Grey, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the whole bondage and discipline S&M thing. So I thought, to understand this, I need to read. And so I read the story of O, and
yeah.
that disturbed me even more.
Yeah.
And,
well, yeah, that's...
And I just kind of grappled with basically understanding that. And finally, someone that I was kind of pen pals with online, a writer, I think she's in South Africa, she said that you should read Paulo Coelho's 11 Minutes. And I did, and that kind of explained it for me, to my satisfaction.
What is the book called?
It's 11
Minutes.
It's
called 11 Minutes.
11 Minutes,
and
yeah.
It's about a prostitute, a Brazilian prostitute who goes to Switzerland, I think, and has these sexual... experiences. It goes into that the S&M thing, and it kind of made me come to terms with it, because I did want one of those stories in the book, and there's a hilarious story in the book, but it's also very realistic, I think, of what goes through, you know, the participants' minds when they're doing things like that.
Is that the one Lady Sally?
Yes.
And the Walled Garden. Yeah, that's a good one. And Slave Nano, the writer, is actually a writer of erotica, right?
Yes. and he's a British writer.
Yeah, it's actually really well written. I mean, and what I loved about it is that there was a lot of horticulture in it. You know, yeah. He really...
Well, it's a brilliant... it's a brilliant theme because it's never been done in the kind of public realm before. You know? I mean, it's always like academic. And to bring it to... I mean, you know, Carmen, what was the book that you and I both read? It just slipped my mind. By Elizabeth...
The Signature of All Things. Did you read that as well?
Yeah. That was a great book. It kind of touched on...
There was an erotic scene.
It kind of touched on a lot of that. But it's wonderful to bring plants into the sexual world and to think of them as living beings and procreating.
And sexual beings. And this particular story... poisonous
and I'm
plants.
Surprised it really hasn't been done before.
I think the detail with which some of these writers got into the plants, I mean, you could tell that it's well researched. In this particular book, it's about a garden designer, mm-hmm. right, who is asked to design basically an S&M garden, mm-hmm. A pleasure garden, literally, for this lady.
Yeah.
And she, you know, they list all many, many plants that cause itch and irritation and, you know, pain.
Yeah.
And poison.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's
and
just...
Don't forget the cucumbers.
And the carrots. Yes.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, we, Alice and I work in New York. We never get these kinds of interesting requests, you know? It's just like, you know, I need a play area for my kids.
Yeah.
I need a barbecue spot.
A dining spot.
I wish somebody would ask, you know, me for something interesting like that. Oh, anyway.
Well, we have to take a break. Yeah. Stay on the line, Sandra, and we'll be back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Alice and I are getting kind of sexy today.
Steamy in the radio booth.
Yeah, we forgot to mention in the first part of the show, this is not going to be a G-rated show. So if there's any small children or people who are offended by sexual language, they should leave now.
By the sexuality of plants.
Plants. So Sandra Knopf is with us. We're talking about her book, 50 Shades of Green. And I have to say, I read 50 Shades of Grey. I wasn't shocked by really anything in the book. But these short stories, to me, are so much more interesting than that book. You know, I read the first one and the second one, and this to me is just so much better. In fact, Sandra and I, you and I talked about which was my favorite, and it was really hard, you know, to try to pick a favorite. But I think I'd like to read from the one that I think is one of my favorites, because it kind of has a little twist and surprise at the end. And I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs. It's from the one called Love Lies Bleeding. And I forget who's the author.
Janine Ashbless.
Yes. Okay. So here's how this one begins, and I love it. He comes to tend the garden almost every day. I watch him from the high windows of my house, crouched up there right under the frieze of weeping nymphs. The glass is filthy, but I have no problem keeping him in view because my windows face every point of the compass rose, and he seems to glow against the foliage as he plants and prunes and wrestles the overgrown rhododendrons. Oh, I long to go out and see him face to face, but I don't dare. I can't. I've been ill so long. All through the last winter, he cut back the bushes, revealing the lank and spindly grass of the neglected paths. He wore thick black trousers with Husqvarna written down them and made an unbelievable racket as he worked. The smoke from the bonfires he tended turned the air hazy, and he drank steaming soup from the metal flask he brought with him. His eyes are blue. He is beautiful. By spring, he'd cleared right the way around my house. Other people came to look over the place. They admired the Ionic columns and the mournful caryatids at the porch and examined the mortar of the stones, but I wasn't interested in them. I only wanted to see him. Long legs, skillful hands, a body quick and strong and lithe. While he was uprooting rhododendron stumps and felling the sycamore that had infested every patch the rhododendrons had not claimed, he wore his hair tied back. Now that it's warmer, he lets it hang loose sometimes, untidy hair that runs to sun-blonded curls at the tips. He's tall with broad shoulders, and his face is more browned and weathered by the sun than you'd guess just from those boyish locks. He does not often bother to shave. Papa would not approve of him. Isn't that great? And there's no, like, there's no real sexy, foul language in that.
No.
But it sets
a feeling.
It's right. You know, and that to me spoke to the feminine. Well, I think what you were trying to say, Sandra, that the 50 Shades of Grey was the male dominant, right? And this, not that all of these stories are, you know, female dominant or whatever, but it had a different tone.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they are about the female point of view,
yeah,
and about the female taking charge.
Mm-hmm.
So. I mean, there are a couple stories in there where it's male.
Yeah.
There's a couple of stories about gay men.
Yeah.
But overall, it's all about women, and that's what I love, too. I love seeing them taking charge and being the ones who are telling the story.
So when you put the call out for people to enter their story, where did you get submissions from?
I received submissions from many countries, actually. Six or seven countries. Some from Britain. Two of the writers are British. The rest of the writers in the book are from the United States, but they're from all over the country, too.
Mm-hmm.
We have a man from Texas and a woman who went to law school at Yale, wrote one of the stories. It's very diverse.
Yeah, the stories are very diverse too. Did you have to do a lot of editing of them, or were they kind of like ready to go when they?
No, these writers were very highly skilled, and I had to do very little. Very little.
Was there parameters like for a word count or, you know?
Yes, but I didn't want to put too much of that as far as word count. I did, but I can't remember what it was. It was pretty generous.
Okay.
They could be pretty long, but I did specify that there wouldn't be certain acts in the book.
Oh, okay.
And I won't go into that.
When I said submissions, I was just laughing at all the puns that are, you know, floating around today.
Yes, definitely.
So tell us, what's next? Are you going to do a version 2?
I would love to do another one.
Shades of Darker Green?
I'm right. Pardon me?
Shades of Darker Green?
Yeah.
50 Shades of Chartreuse.
Well, there's so many things that I was thinking of as the stories came in that weren't touched upon. I thought of a story with a beekeeper. You know,
yeah.
There were some other things that I just thought begged to be explored in this genre of garden erotica. So.
And you self-published it.
Yeah,
yes, I did.
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, how was that? What was that process like? And I noticed that I think your daughter designed the cover, right?
Yes,
that's great.
I had a different idea for the cover, a woman with overalls on, and she said no. And we talked about it. We came up with this cover, which I like.
What plant is that?
That's a poppy.
Yeah.
It's a poppy. Open. Okay.
Yeah. It's,
it's splitting open. It's brilliant. It's
yes.
The perfect,
especially
it's
for
very feminine.
Yeah,
it is. It's like a modern Georgia O'Keeffe, you know?
Yeah. No, I think Georgia O'Keeffe would enjoy.
I think she would.
Some of these stories. Have you done readings from the book, Sandra, at all?
we're scheduled to do a reading this weekend.
Oh,
but
great.
No, I haven't yet.
Oh, that's good.
So you self-published it. Tell us a little bit about that, and where can people get the book, and, you know, how are you publicizing it and all of that?
Well, I am publicizing it along with my other books that I've started. I started my own publishing company a few years ago,
right,
called Green Woman Publishing, and I've always been a big fan of garden writing, and I wanted to do something in that. So I started Green Woman Magazine and did 6 issues of that, and then I wanted to do something different, I think, for a break, and that's kind of why I did this book, too. I just wanted to do something a little more light and explore new territory, so I did that. But we publish all of our books on Amazon CreateSpace.
Uh-huh.
We're just a little home-based publishing company. It's in one of our spare bedrooms in the bungalow that I live in, and everything's on Amazon. And
do you publish on demand, or do you did you publish like a certain amount of books?
No,
you know?
it's all POD.
Great.
Publish on demand. Okay. So I like that from an environmental point of view, because we're not wasting paper and there's not books sitting around and so on. So I'm really happy with that. I kind of discovered how to do that a year or so ago with my first book.
And then
and I
is
thought,
it
this is the way to go for
is it
people like me.
Is it available in an ebook format too?
Yes, it is.
Good.
And it's only $2.99 as an ebook.
Oh.
So it's very inexpensive. It's fun to have the book for gifts, would say. But it's on Amazon right now, and I don't know how we're getting to the end of the show or not, but I want to give away 5 copies of the book.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Paperback copies today.
Yeah. So what do they need to do in order to win copies of the book?
Well, the first 5 people that go to my Facebook page, Green Woman Publishing, and you'll see the post there about being on We Dig Plants, and if you write something about hearing about the book on the show, the first 5 people, I'll send you a book. I'll message you and get your address.
That's good. And I highly recommend people do that, because it is a great read. They're short stories.
Yeah.
They're fun. And Sandra, I think you should send a copy to Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote The Signature of All Things, because she will appreciate it. You know, she did a lot of research for her book. Right.
For her mosses
and the closet. What was it called?
The closet.
That is in chapter 7.
Yeah.
And that also kind of inspired me to do this book, because I was reading that last December, I think.
Yeah.
Or it was my Christmas present to myself. And I'm reading chapter 7 and thinking, this is really hot.
Yeah.
It was.
And I thought, this is a sign I need to go ahead with this 50 Shades of Green idea, even if it sounds a little crazy. But, you know, I just really think this is unexplored territory. Elizabeth Gilbert published it first. And I'm sure there have been other stories with, you know, the garden as a scene.
Yeah.
Well, there's a
for these things.
Yeah, I mean, there's ubiquitous, you know, shirtless gardener, you
right.
know, like
and the pool guy
and the pool guy,
right.
and
there's
know.
The Garden of Eden, and you know, like
right.
there's all those things. But I don't know. This is a modern, and it's a collection, which I think is what's really nice. It's not just one story.
And it would be great. Wouldn't it be amazing, Sandra, if it could be illustrated?
Like. That's what I was going to say.
We thought about that. We did think about that.
I mean, you know, not in a, you know,
in a how-to sort of way.
But like if each, almost like, you know, one panel, you know, representing each would be beautiful.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
Go ahead and send me some illustrations, and we will revamp the book, people, and get your...
Because I think it would be incredible.
Well,
that's
kinky but tasteful.
Well, I mean, those are, you know, we mentioned earlier the George O'Keeffe paintings. Like,
that,
I mean, she was the one first woman to really bring those issues front and center in a public realm. So, you know, here we are in the literature world, and I think you've done it brilliantly. And the book is really fun to read. And thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I'm going to reread it. I'm going to reread it again.
That's what I said. It's been a pleasure.
Well, what I love about it is that everyone does have a favorite story, and they're different, usually a different story. So I love that it can appeal to a broad audience.
Yeah, and let's look at it this way. Everybody goes to garden shows, and there's all kinds of lectures and presentations. How interesting would this be?
Way more interesting.
As a gardening
topic.
You can go to every sort of garden club, and you will pack the house, Sandra.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you will pack the house because it's just, it speaks to human nature and needs, and it just appeals to everyone.
Yeah.
You know,
it's really a brilliant, brilliant concept that you've embarked on. And
thank you. And we that will means so much.
And we will post again about the how to win the five copies. We'll blast that on our end.
And it's fun
the
to look for.
The are just, you know, the blasting. So many times.
And it's really fun to try to find images that relate to the post. Like, let's see. When you Google sexy plants, you get a lot of different things.
Yeah, you sure do.
Including
some of them wanted, some of them unwanted.
I was like, ooh, time to delete this history off of my computer. Anyway, thanks for being on the show. Good luck. And
This is the best Valentine's present.
Yes.
The best Valentine's present.
Please go and pick up the book and share it with your loved one.
Anyway, thanks.
You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Alice and I just want to say a few words about our fans. Tons of new fans have joined the ranks this week. And I noticed that a lot more guys are following us, which is really, really great. Maybe it has something to do with the tool giveaway from the Garden Tool Company. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we're really glad to see the guys. A couple of guys I want to shout out to. Clement Lee, who just became a fan. He's in Taipei.
Yes.
Taiwan, which is great. Colin Langendorfer from Okina, Illinois. Just, you know, guys, we don't want to just make it a female thing. You guys are welcome. Amongst the women as well. So how do you win the weekly prize? You have to go to our Facebook page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants, or you can also go to our Instagram.
Groundworks Gardens NYC.
That's right. So follow us to enter the drawing and win some really the best tools, the best gardening tools you could buy. The show has been written and produced by Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg, and engineered by Jack Inslee. Thanks
Happy
for
Valentine's
listening.
Day.
And yes, see you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.